welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I'm the host of this talk show on travel. And this week, the subject is service travel, also known as volunteerism. And we're going to find out more about what that means in my interviews with my two guests. My first guest is Erin Guttenplan, and she's the founder of an organization called Edge of Seven. And then my second guest, I'm taking it a little bit more local here in Telluride, Colorado. I'll be chatting with Sharon Schuterin, who has done a lot of service work in far-flung lands, particularly in Bhutan. And she's going to be talking about her personal experiences. So I hope you can stick around for the half-hour show. I have Erin Guttenplan on the phone. Erin's based in Denver. She's created an organization called Edge of Seven, and it offers volunteers the unique opportunity to work closely with people who face different obstacles in life, possess different histories, and hold different perspectives on our world. And I would like to welcome Erin Guttenplan to Travel Fun. Hi, Erin.
Hi, how are you?
Good. It's nice to have you as a guest on my show. I have to say, I heard about you from a friend of mine who actually did some service work with you about a year or so ago. Tell everyone, actually, what is Edge of Seven?
Yeah, so Edge of Seven is an organization, a nonprofit, that connects volunteers with service projects that empower girls in developing countries. So currently, we offer projects in Nepal, India, Thailand, and Cambodia, but as the name Edge of Seven denotes, we'd like to be present on all seven continents in the future and really have a presence throughout the world.
Oh, that sounds very ambitious. When did you create Edge of Seven?
Just over a year and a half ago. I had worked for an educational travel company for about 7 years and really had an interest in service travel and exploring that sector. So I took off for Nepal, India, Thailand, and Cambodia for 5 months to research non-government organizations that were already doing great work and making great strides to alleviate poverty and empower girls. And our whole business model is to support those locally based organizations. And I returned to the U.S. this time last year and launched Edge of Seven.
And tell me more about the getting this organization off the ground and what really inspired you to do it, because I'm sure it took a tremendous amount of energy.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm a firm believer that in the power of travel and the power of educational travel and experiential learning. And I myself studied abroad in college, and that experience really shaped the course of my life and my interests. And I really believe in exposing Americans to some of the challenges that face developing countries. And I do think that if people get out and see the world, they'll become more effective at changing it. So that's been a huge piece of this. Also, just visiting with rural communities in the countries that I mentioned, one in particular, the one that we built a primary school in last summer, just seeing the incredible poverty and the effect that had on me, I was ready to actually act on that and make a change rather than just returning home and going back to my normal day-to-day.
Tell us about some of the projects you are currently involved in with Edge of Seven.
Sure. So our current focus, we're building a dorm for 40 girls in the Everest region of Nepal. So in that region, 70% of girls drop out of school after the 10th grade because their village is a 1-3-day walk from the higher secondary school, which is grades 11 and 12. So we're building this dorm so that 40 girls can continue their education, and we're going to provide vocational training programs outside of school hours so that we're hoping to really equip these girls with the skills and confidence to go back into their communities and really make some societal changes.
And how would somebody actually participate in working on this project?
Great question. So we have volunteer groups running in May and June, May 2nd, 16th, 30th, and June 27th. And volunteers can go for a minimum of 2 weeks or 4 or 6 weeks, however long they'd like. And volunteers actually live in the rural communities that we're serving in Nepal with Nepali host families. They work side by side the locals. So we're actually building this project or building this hostel from the ground up, digging, carrying rocks, painting, plastering, depending on which segment of the project you're visiting. But when volunteers go, you know, we have a day of orientation in Kathmandu, and then you get right into it at the project site for about 10 or 11 days, and then return back home to the U.S. So if volunteers want to get involved, they should just email me at Erin, E-R-I-N, at edgeof7.org, and I can begin the process of signing them up.
And, of course, it's recommended for them to check out your website, edgeof7.org, and there you see all kinds of information about your organization and the individual projects that are available, group projects that are going on.
Yeah.
So would you say that you have to be a hardy person, both physically and mentally, to embark on such a trip?
I think that these experiences are for the bold and adventurous. And I, from a skill set perspective, a lot of people ask me if you need construction experience or architecture experience or anything like that. We do take volunteers from any skill set, so you don't have to have any type of experience in order to be a volunteer on one of our projects, just an eagerness to learn. But we look for challenging projects because that's where the need lies. So you are living in a very rural environment, sometimes without easy access to water, sometimes without electricity. But I think these conditions really expose you to the real challenges facing rural communities in developing countries. So that's really important to us, to really work in communities that need our support. So it is for someone who's very flexible, willing to roll with the punches, but you're with volunteers and their work schedule for the day. You can take as many breaks as you want. If you're feeling particularly exhausted on a given day, we encourage volunteers to rest. It's really pushing yourself as hard as much as your personal limits allow.
And describe a typical day. Let's say on this project you have in rural Nepal, building a hostel for these young women so that they can go to school. What would a typical day be like working on this project?
That's a great question. So volunteers rise with the host families at sunrise. All Nepali host families get up usually before the sun rises to begin cleaning the house and preparing food and farming. So that's around, 5 to 6 a.m. depending on the time of year. Then you have tea with your host family, hang out for a bit, and then usually head to the project site around 8. Work from 8 to noon, again, taking breaks as frequently as you'd like. We usually do have one big group tea break around 10 or 10:30. Then we have lunch at the project site just for the volunteers. We do try to infuse some Western food in because when you're eating with host families, you're eating traditional Nepali dishes. So at lunch, we have one volunteer meal with spaghetti or French fries or something to mix it up a bit. And then in the afternoon, you'll work again from about 1 to 5 or 6, again, taking a tea break in the afternoon, working side by side the locals. And then you return to your host family in the evening, and you can just hang out, read, visit with your host family. You always have lots of tea. Tea is forthcoming around every corner in Nepal.
Is it black tea?
It's wonderful. and then usually you turn in around sunset because oftentimes in rural areas there may not be electricity, and you're exhausted because you've done hour after hour of manual labor. So I usually go to bed between 8 and 8:30 when I'm in Nepal, and then you do it again the next day.
And I imagine that communication is more through gestures. I don't know whether many of the host families speak English.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's something that it's so difficult to explain, but it's so powerful. Really, the host families speak very minimal English. We do teach our volunteers some key phrases in Nepali and some cultural differences before heading out into the field. But, you know, it's hello, how are you? That's about the extent of the communication. But so much is communicated in warmth and gestures and hugs and smiles. And really, it's such a powerful experience. This summer when every volunteer group left, there were tears shed on both sides, and you really, it's because these Nepali people are welcoming you into their family with open arms, and while they may not have many material possessions, everything is shared from the moment you walk in the door and you're treated like a member of the family. And I think it just goes so far, and all of our volunteers have been profoundly impacted by that relationship with their host family.
I'm looking at your website, and you have some testimonials up there from people that have worked on the school building project in rural Nepal. And one here says, volunteering for Edge of Seven in Nepal was incredibly challenging and rewarding. I experienced living in a culture radically different from what I was used to and came away with close friends and a deep understanding of different cultures in that country. The Edge of Seven staff was incredibly helpful and professional. The program provides the peace of mind that makes volunteering abroad a pleasure, not a question mark. Oh, that's a nice testimonial.
It is a nice testimonial, and we've been, you know, our volunteers are our number one priority, and we do create a challenging experience, and we recognize that, and we do push people because we believe that's where real growth happens. But our volunteers, I think, by and large, have really been changed by this, even a two-week experience. My own father actually joined us in Nepal last summer, and to see him go through the process in 2 weeks, and it was just such an eye-opening experience and really a perspective changer, even for someone who's 60 years old. So these experiences, while challenging, are just incredibly rewarding, and I think just open your eyes up to some of the challenges facing our world.
I have been visiting with Aaron Guttenplan, founder of Edge of Seven. And Aaron, if you just give a quick recap of the upcoming projects you have in rural Nepal.
Sure, I'd love to. So right now we're building a hostel so that 40 girls can go to higher secondary school in the Everest region of Nepal. And if volunteers want to join us for 2 weeks, living with Nepali host families and rolling up their sleeves and building side-by-side the locals, email Aaron at edgeofseven.org, and we have dates throughout May and June of 2011.
Right. And if it's not for this spring, then I'm sure you'll have other projects lined up for the upcoming year. So for people to check in at edgeofseven.org to see what you have going on.
Absolutely.
Aaron, bravo for all you're doing, and thank you for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Thank you for having me. It's been great to be a guest on your show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Om Sade Sham Shantim Babatu. Om Sade Sham Purnam Babatu. Sade Sham Mangalam Babatu. Asatoma.
Hello, and welcome back to Travel Fun. I am continuing my program on service travel, and I have a local, Sharon Shooterin, from Telluride, here in the studio. And Sharon has done a lot of service work for a number of years in far-flung countries, and she has organized many of her trips on her own. I would like to welcome Sharon Shooterin to Travel Fun. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So talk about how you first got involved in service travel?
Well, and I apologize for my voice. I have the Telluride crud a little bit, as everybody does, so forgive the fact that I sound like a frog. Actually, what happened was I had done a number of trips with the Mudbutts, and I ended up going with Telluride Academy to Bhutan back in 2004. And like everyone else, fell in love with Bhutan and said, I want to go back, but I don't want to go back as a tourist. I want to go back and give back. So I thought about programs dealing with alcoholism, dealing with domestic violence, all kinds of things, and was unable to really, you know, while still working full time or, you know, on all my various things, to do that. And ended up coming in contact with Jeff and Becky Marsh, who Jeff is the medical director of the Bhutan Cleft Care Project. And it's a long story to explain how it came about, but let's suffice it to say that I ended up being invited to be the non-medical coordinator of the project. So that was sort of my first exposure. And since 2007, I've been going and spending anywhere from 6 weeks to 2 months every year in Southeast Asia, Bhutan mainly, but Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam.
And that has been working with the Cleft Care Project?
The main focus has been, that was sort of the more organized, was the Cleft Care Project. And we go for approximately 2 weeks every year, and the doctors do cleft surgeries, and we do training with Bhutanese nurses and doctors. It's sort of the teach a man to fish kind of thing. We do the surgeries, but we also try and help them get up to speed so that they eventually will hopefully be able to do all their own work.
And what has your mission entailed?
The cleft mission?
Yes.
It is a cleft care project. So what it is to do cleft lip and cleft palate surgeries. And again, we have a Bhutanese doctor that we've been training and doing continuing education for, training the anesthetic nurses, some of the anesthesiologists, and various other recovery nurses, operating room nurses. And we usually do somewhere between 60 and 70 surgeries. The majority of those are cleft. We do always, last year we had a young woman, 18 years old, whose face had been mauled by a bear, and he basically tried to take her face off, and we've had burn victims. So I'd say we often have three or four where, based on the circumstances, because it's kind of an emergency, we take care of those kind of things, or we do repairs on them.
I guess I should be more precise in asking, what are your days like when you go and work on this project in Bhutan?
Well, I'll tell you, the Bhutan is a little bit different from the other project I worked on last year. But in Bhutan, we basically arrive in Paro. We have lunch and we get in a vehicle. And in Bhutan, it takes a long time to get anywhere because there's one road and it's very windy. We get to the next place, spend the night, which is near Wang Du Po Drong. And then we get up the next morning, drive to Trongsa, which is where the hospital that we're based out of. Load up all the things that we've left in the hotel the year before, and take them over to the hospital. The nurses start setting up. There, literally, we have an operating room that has almost nothing in it. So we set up the entire operating room with things that we've left, things that are brought by the nurses and doctors from Thimphu, and then we do triage on the people that are the drop-ins to figure out who's going to get operated on when, et cetera. My day's a little different from everyone else's. We are at breakfast by 7. Most of us start walking over to the hospital, which is about a 45-minute walk. Some people take the bus. Bus meets us partway. We start doing surgeries usually by 8:30. And basically the doctor's and the nurse's day is doing the surgeries and recovery room, et cetera. My day, because I'm non-medical, is that I help make sure the schedules, there's copy of the schedules for everyone. I interview every single family of every patient we have. So I have to triage and figure out when I can get them done. Takes about 45 minutes, sometimes longer if we have two or three languages we have to go through to do the interviews. I find the patients, so the nurses don't have to be running out to try and find the patients. I get them into the waiting area, make sure that they've got their records, make sure they're gowned, and sort of, I'm sort of the gopher. I make sure that things are running on time so the doctors can do what they do, which is incredible surgery, and I try and take care of some of the other details.
And are you interacting with a number of other foreigners? Are you mostly with Bhutanese, or is there a mix of both?
Our project is international, so we have Americans, me, Jeff and Becky. We have a doctor out of Rochester, and for the last two years he's brought a resident with him. And then we have Canadian anesthesiologists and some Canadian nurses, and we have a Swiss doctor who's retiring this year and won't be coming again. We have a German anesthesiologist. We've had an Israeli pediatric dentist who's come with us, and an Israeli nurse that's come first time last year. And then we have Indian speech therapists and pathologists. We have a Bhutanese doctor, and then Bhutanese nurses and staff, basically, who are being trained or being given continuing medical education as to clefts. And then we have there is one Bhutanese speech therapist and one who's in a graduate program in India.
What has this experience meant to you?
People say this, and it always sounds so trite and so cliche to say, I get more out of it than I give. We work, last year was one of the harder years. We work probably a minimum of 10 hours a day, often 12. And we get back exhausted, and then we, you know, have dinner and quick try and fight over the computer, and then we go to sleep and we get up the next morning and do it again, and we have one day off in the middle. That said, just what I've learned from the people that we've been around, I think I have the best job in the whole project because I get to talk to all the families. Some speak English, some it's through an interpreter, and I have a wonderful partner who is Bhutanese and speaks various languages, and he translates for me and works with me. But just these are people who've walked for half a day to a day with a baby on their back and a toddler by their side, to then be able to get on a bus and come for 3 days, to come to a hospital where there's one bed and four people in the family are sleeping on the bed. There's no books. There's no magazines. They cook their own food. Sometimes the hospital provides some food. We try and provide coloring books and toys for the kids. But they don't need to be entertained the way we do. And watching their patients and just the lengths that they will go for their children and for their family members is just amazing. And just getting outside of yourself, seeing a different culture, seeing that you can give back to someone else, and it's not all about you, and stretching your limits, really. I would highly recommend it to anyone who even has the slightest interest in it, because I think it really literally expands your horizons.
So it's not so much about taking in landscapes and different foods and that sort of thing, but having a feel for the way another people.
Absolutely, because we're in Trongsa for 10 to 12 days. We are staying in a hotel, but we go into town. We've made friends with the people at the hotel. We've got a connection. I feel like Trongsa is my other hometown. We walk to the hospital often or walk back from the hospital, so we meet people along the way. Most of the kids speak English, or they want to practice their English, so they always want to talk to us. And so there's a real connection. And I think that's one of the things about volunteer travel that is really different, is when you go someplace, it gives you a connection to a place. It's not just, even if you're going to go hang in a place for 2 weeks, if you're just hanging as a tourist, it's a very different situation than it is if you're working there. And I say that having spent time on the Thai-Burmese border this most recent trip for about 3 weeks, and I connected to TBBHI, Thai-Burma Border Health Initiative. And I connected with that because Peter Harrelson from here had worked with them, gone up and worked with them, and Sam McBride, who works as an ER doc at the clinic periodically on a rotation and works at Indian Health Services, works with them. And so through them, I connected with this program. And it would have been a very different experience. The town I was in, Sanklapuri, is not much of a tourist town except for Thai tourists. You probably wouldn't go there for that. But it would have been a very different experience to be there just hanging out for 3 weeks versus being in the midst of everything. And as it turned out, most of what I expected I was going to be doing didn't happen because they had the Burmese elections, and then violence broke out and bombs started going off around me, and we started delivering food and supplies and things to and water to the refugees. So sometimes you get definitely taken out of your sphere of comfort unknowingly.
What I think is important for us to talk about is you have approached your service travel work in a very unconventional manner. You have sort of made it happen for yourself. You haven't signed up for any tours or done the volunteerism per se. You kind of did your research and lined up your connections. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think people travel very differently. And there's some people that want to take a tour and want to make sure everything, they know what's happening. And there's other people, men, I'd say probably the bulk of people from Telluride who travel just go. And just, you know, and there's people who are far more adventuresome than I am. That's all, it's difficult. If you've got 2 weeks to go travel somewhere, it's really difficult to set something up. And if that's the case, your other guest, I checked out her website, and her program looked excellent.
Erin from Edge of
Heaven.
Yes,
yes. I just had a chance to glance at it, and it looked excellent. So if you're someone who says, look, I've got 2 weeks off a year, I have 3 weeks off, and I want to go and I want to be on the beach for a week, but I'd like to volunteer, hers is a great program. It sounds like a great program. On the other hand, almost everywhere I've been, they need help. I mean, you could show up and say, where's the local orphanage? And walk in and say, you know, do you need some help? The problem that arises always is that it's hard for projects to integrate someone for a short period of time. It's sometimes more work for them than it's worth. And that's why all these organizations that set things up have to charge what they do, because they're setting up the infrastructure for you. My style of travel is to sort of know where I'm going, kind of, show up, check out the place for a day or whatever, and then kind of decide whether I'm going to stay there or not. So I tend to freelance travel, at least to a certain extent. And again, not to the extent that many people in Telluride do. And that said, I didn't just go over there and show up in a town and do something. I did do my research and try and check things out. But what I found is, for example, in Sanklapuri, that most of the volunteers there had gone on the web, and there is one orphanage home kind of place, and everybody taps into that. So everybody that's a volunteer there, at least initially, it started that way. There were lots of other volunteer opportunities. It was just that they don't all have websites, and, you know, it was a problem. So it's difficult to sometimes to do that.
Before the interview, you had suggested that, you know, just put it out there. Go on Facebook or Twitter, start chatting about places. Say, I'm looking to do some volunteer work in such and such a country or such and such a type of volunteer work, and just kind of make connections over the internet to find out about different
absolutely.
Places.
Absolutely. And especially, I mean, in Telluride, there's so many people that have traveled a lot and know people, know of organizations. I get a lot of my contacts through people here. So, yeah, throw it out on Facebook or throw it out and just say, you know, is there anybody that's been to whatever country and do you know of any local opportunities? I've got some contacts. I know some people in Nepal who told me if you ever have someone that wants to volunteer in Nepal, let me know. I met in Bhutan. There's locals here. Laura Kudo helped start a school in Nepal, I think with Kathy James, but I'm not sure. I have a contact in Laos who does, it's the Laos project that you can check out on the internet. So I have a lot of connections and other people do. Throw it out there. Give me a call. get on Facebook, just say, I'm interested in going to this country. Has anybody had any experience with it? And I think you'll get a lot of results.
Are you on Facebook, Sharon?
I am.
Okay, Sharon Shooter. And for those that don't know, should I add that you're our local judge here? And
sure, but then you can't tell them how long I'm away volunteering.
Okay. Sharon, thank you so much for being a guest on Travel Fun. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Aaron Guttenplan again from Edge of Seven. And I will be blogging about this on my blog, bonjourcolorado.com. Check that out. And I hope to have a podcast of this interview because I find what both of you have to say very interesting. Take care and good luck with all your travels.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sharon. Bye-bye.
Ravana.